Somehow I've grown up in a household where computers were present since I'm like can remember, so internet was something which I have grown up in the internet, actually.
That is Nina Rosen, a Salesforce developer and architect for Neomatic over in Germany. I'm Josh Burke, your host for the Salesforce Developer Podcast, and here you'll hear stories and insights from developers for developers. Today, we sit down and talk with Nina about various aspects of integrating Salesforce with other platforms, starting with an introduction to Salesforce.
I started an apprenticeship at a consulting company, or consulting and product development, and a customer decided they want to go on Salesforce, and we were doing prior the Nodes Domino development, and so we decided to be part of the solution instead of part of the problem.
Nice.
And that leads to that I was, I think, 2 years in the company and was somehow starting to managing the Salesforce side of the project.
Gotcha. And then describe your current job to me.
Currently, I'm building an app, which is my first step. That's not an integration. It's a partner relationship management system based on Salesforce.
Gotcha.
And based on the financial service cloud. But prior that, I've built integration apps for IBM and IBM staff, Microsoft staff, and played around with quite some other APIs.
Gotcha. And that's our main topic today, as you have done a lot with, like you're saying, between IBM, Microsoft, SAP, and more. But let's talk about a little bit of the basics of integrations. A lot of integrations are authenticated, and much of that is by OAuth. So first, to level set for everybody, what exactly is OAuth?
OAuth is an authentication standard, or actually, these are two authentication standards, which is one is just OAuth, and the other one, the current one, is OAuth 2.0. OAuth 2 is a lot about different kinds of flows you can have to authenticate users, how you can make sure. It's a lot about authenticate users and making sure that you have matching identities between systems without needing to store a password of the user in another system. And it also defines how you can define a scope, how much information a user, or not a user, a service can access on your other side.
Yeah, I always, when I was talking to audiences about OAuth and asked them if they'd ever encountered it, and when people said no, I'm like, actually, you probably have, because anytime Facebook asked you if you wanted to allow, you know, game XYZ to use your credentials, well, congratulations, you just used OAuth. But as you were mentioning, there's different kinds of OAuth, and we've got things within Salesforce that name credentials, all the way down to JWT tokens. Do you have a preference for the kind of OAuth flow that you use?
I really like the Beware token OAuth flow, because it's somehow the simplest flow, which has not so much errors you can do so easily, where you could break your whole security system. One of the easiest errors you can do is encrypt information in your state. There shouldn't be any information. Otherwise, you are open to attacks.
Gotcha. Nice. And kind of more on that, OAuth is kind of considered the gold standard, but like how much of a standard is it really? Like, what kind of distinctions have you found across implementations with OAuth?
OAuth is a standard, but it allows you things to do that other standards don't allow you. You can, for example, rename variables, or there are mandatory variables which are not mandatory. So right. They are defined as mandatory, but later it said, yeah, they can be replaced. So implementations of OAuth don't fit to each other.
Gotcha.
All the time.
So it's a standard with a little bit of flexibility. Has that caused any problems for you in the past?
Yeah, it has. I think it was working with IBM Connections, while using IBM Connections as service provider and Salesforce as identity provider. We were trying to get it work with the standard implementation you have in the named credentials, but it wasn't working in any way. And there were a few things that were different. There were renamed attributes. There were attributes you weren't allowed to set on the IBM connection side. And all of this leads to that we had to rewrite the identity provider on Salesforce, which can be quite a challenge because Apex is good, but...
Right, but not really designed for that kind of task. I totally understand. Okay, so once you get past these hurdles, you've got your token, you've got your authentication. How do you get to know the API that you're integrating with?
Most of the time, I just start throwing random things on the endpoints I know for the API, and look how it reacts.
Gotcha.
Where are the limits? What happens if I don't put any attributes in? Yeah. Just checking somehow the boundary cases.
So that's kind of like test-driven development, but for APIs.
Yeah, essentially, yes. And I think you could do test-driven development for integrations really, really well because you really know what you wanted to have in the end.
Right, because you're kind of expecting, I guess, not just like a kind of response, but you're expecting like a very specific JSON format to come back, right?
Yeah, it don't need to be JSON. Right. You can also get some XML back, or sometimes you even get plain text. And so, yeah, but you know what you expect, and you know that the answers, if you do two times the same question in a acceptable time frame, you get the same answers.
Right.
Gotcha. Or at least somehow.
Right. And then coming to the Salesforce side of things, what are some things that you do to structure Apex to make it friendly with these callouts?
I think the most important thing is put all the hard work in a helper class.
Mm.
Don't try to have your real callout in your business logic or in your transformation logic. Split it. Say, yeah, okay, this is the callout I make, and then I'm doing maybe the unwrapping if I have some wrapping around the answer. Mm-hmm. And yeah, keep it out of your main code.
Interesting. So is that in case you need to make different callouts with different classes, or what's the big net gain from that?
Mostly it keeps your code readable.
Mm.
And understandable for somebody who isn't familiar with what you are doing in the callout.
Gotcha.
Especially parsing without a type or untyped JSON parsing can be really, really hard to read. Mm. And so it's better to not surface it to somebody who just wants to understand the business logic.
Gotcha. Well, to follow up on that, do you have any tips with Apex and how to handle the different kinds of formats of incoming and outgoing data formats?
I think if you have a very stable answers, you can do the parsing directly in Apex classes you created for the data structure.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have dynamic answers, it really depends on what information do you need. Sometimes it makes sense to parse it into maps or maps of maps. So it really depends on your use case then. But I think get familiar with dynamic Apex because it saves you a whole lot of time.
And going to another thing on the platform, what use cases have you found for platform events?
The use case I like platform events the most for, using them for push notification, for errors. So I try to keep the noise low on platform events because I think most integrations I've built so far weren't time critical. So if I need to wait for 5 minutes, that's okay. I don't need to have something which works instant.
Right. Well, so that's actually something that back in my consulting days, I ran into all the time, and I'm curious as to your experiences on it. I would always have clients who are like, we need this answer in real time. And I'm like, you don't. You actually don't. Like how many business use cases have you found where the actual phrase, you know, a real-time response was something that the customer actually needed?
Quite sometimes, actually. Okay. If somebody's searching on another platform, mm-hmm. you want to have the results in real time, but you don't want to cache these results on Salesforce. So there's, again, no need to do platform events for near real-time or real-time behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big point. If you need real-time,
yeah,
better do UI integrations instead of trying to pump the data into Salesforce and try to build up a real-time connection with all data, because you don't know what the user will be asking. And if you already know what the user is asking for, you can get it in close to real-time depending on the system. Sometimes gotcha. You need some kind of middleware which orchestrates your calls, but mm-hmm. I think this shouldn't be the problem.
Got it. Now, one of the oldest ways of having two systems to talk to each other is just good old-fashioned email. Have you had any solutions that have relied on that?
Yeah, and I'm not proud of it. But I think it was a Jira integration, which worked way better than using the Jira APIs back then. But it was working so fine that I needed to stop the customer to use it, actually, because it was creating also some bugs.
Nice. I'm with you. I've been there, and it's kind of one of those, like, once it works, it works. And I kind of walked away from it after that. So talk to me about considerations on the other side of the fence. For instance, if, you know, I'm Salesforce, I'm calling into an API. What are some considerations for that API in terms of, like, you know, what kind of user should that API be representing, and what kind of access should it have on the system to actually get the job done?
I think the best way for this is to have a user that is calling from Salesforce.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like if I have to do the security. Well, not the security, the sharing and stuff in my code.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have that I call the system and say, get me the data in the name of this user.
Mm-hmm.
Or even better, I have the credentials via OAuth of the user I want to make the call in behalf of.
Right. Now, that makes a lot of sense, because if we think of the layers that we're talking to, if Salesforce is calling the API, then Salesforce is basically the client, and the client shouldn't necessarily be trusted, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think you also never should trust your answer. That's, I think, the next point when we're talking about trust.
Mm-hmm.
If you call in an external system, you can get every answer. And you expect something, but you shouldn't rely on that you get back what you expect.
Because if the server isn't representing, like, you as the user, then you might be getting either different data or data that you're not supposed to be getting.
Not only this case, is maybe somebody has replaced the server I'm currently calling.
Mm.
So it can be an attack vector every integration, actually. And if you trust the user input or the input from the other server,
yeah.
you shouldn't trust either of them, then you can get into really, really bad places really quick.
Interesting. Are there specific steps that you do to kind of protect yourself from that kind of attack?
Yeah, somehow I think the easiest step is to do the normal input sanitizing, like getting rid of quotes, getting rid of special characters you don't know,
mm-hmm.
or you know, but you know they're bad.
Right.
So sanitize your inputs and sanitize your outputs if they are an input from an API. Because in the end, it's, again, user inputs, and you don't know how well sanitized they are.
Right. Now, that's an interesting consideration, because I think I frequently think of API integrations as very, Salesforce calling a system, getting an answer, doing something with that answer. But if Salesforce itself is the man in the middle, then if you don't sanitize your information, you're basically setting yourself up to be the man in the middle attack.
Yeah, definitely. And I have been stopped in security review because of this. So
really?
There are some people looking on this, and I think it's really important, and it made me way better in programming to have to go to security review with my own OAuth implementation, which were kind of interesting.
So thank you, IBM, for having to create your own identity provider, I guess.
Yeah. In the end, it brought me to the place where I'm now, that I can talk confidently about OAuth.
Nice. Okay, well, let's go into some more of the specific projects that you've worked on. For instance, what was it like integrating Microsoft Teams with Salesforce?
Integrating Microsoft Teams was done as in product development. Mm-hmm. And it was in the beginning, it was like, oh no, nothing is working. Because we decided for going to the Graph API. And at the point where we started, it were just released the first stable version. But the stable you really, really need to take with a grain of salt. It sometimes feels like the stable version is more often changing than the beta release of the API.
And for the unfamiliar, describe. So this is Microsoft's Graph API, is that right? Can you give us a description of that?
Yeah, the Graph API is like the new unified API endpoint for all Microsoft products in the 365 family. Gotcha. So it's a new way to go, but it's not finished yet. It's work in progress, but you can do really cool things with it. And I left the company where I built it, but I just got a demo yesterday. They did, and it was really cool, and it's getting faster.
So what were some of the problems that you're having with the quote unquote release version? Was it performance, or was it not responding? Like, what kind of things was it doing?
I think it was not responding really slow, and the worst thing was changing the type of answers you get depending on the release. And sometimes depending on the server you are on.
So
sometimes the US server worked, but the European ones not. And sometimes the other way around.
Got it.
And you don't know on which server you currently are.
Okay. Yeah. Now that sounds like fun. But flip to the other side. Like, what kind of cool things were you doing with that API?
I think the first thing we were doing was search. Which is kind of boring, but kind of cool, because it gives the user the view into the other system.
Gotcha.
And the next step was kind of simple. We said, yeah, okay, you can bookmark yourself the search results on the custom object, or on the standard object in Salesforce you're standing on. So this was a very easy way of integrating another platform with Salesforce. Mm-hmm. And we were doing the authentication with the standard name credentials, which were really, really nice. And I think, took away like 2 months development.
Nice. So talk to me about working with user interfaces themselves. Like, what kind of considerations should people have because you're kind of working with two UIs that you're not under the control of, but sometimes you're trying to bring those two things together. Like what are some pitfalls that people can fall into? What are some tips and tricks you have for that?
We never try to integrate the UI of Office 365 into Salesforce because the design paradigms doesn't fit to each other. So we did every call over Apex. Mm-hmm. And we had a custom front-side component. I think it is written in Aura and always standard components and where needed, SRDS.
Got it. Okay, so moving to another integration, SAP is probably a very common platform for people to need to talk to. What are your experiences like working with SAP?
With SAP was quite pleasant.
Nice.
It was, I think the, I was integrating with the SAC, so the SAP Analytics Cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And it were like a standard integration already built there. So it were just clicks, no code, no hard working. And I think we had it up in 10 minutes, but just because the identity provider needed time to be published.
Wow, a 10-minute solution. So walk me through the components of that solution where you're using zero code. Like, what were the parts of the platform you were using? Like, what, like, was that name credentials? Was that, what kind of callouts was that, et cetera?
The setup steps for integrating SAC with Salesforce were essentially creating a connected app in Salesforce and enable the OAuth settings and use the OAuth information from your connected app in SAP in the SAP connector for Salesforce, click save and click run, choose your objects, and you will have your data in like 5 minutes in your SAC.
Nice. So I guess that's an interesting part of building out these integrations is that you have solutions where you have to build your own identity provider in Apex all the way to basically button click and having that data exposed into custom objects. Nice. So have you ever had integrations go horribly wrong?
Yes. I was doing integration with a call center provider.
Uh-huh.
It were a call center software provider, and the developers of the platform, of the call center platform, didn't understood that saving a changeable return URL in their system where I give some secret on isn't a good way to do an integration. And they were trying to build up OAuth on their side, but they failed horribly because they somehow managed to create a process that leads to that if the user were connected via OAuth, they always had admin rights.
Oh no!
This were the point where I said, no, I don't want to work on this solution anymore because I can't say that this solution will ever be secure.
Right. Like you don't know how to prove that you will do no harm there. That's crazy. And I kind of love how that brings that back full circle because you're talking about both, you know, testing against your integrations, but also, you know, is the API that you're working with, is the other partner you're working with, you know, a trusted partner kind of thing? And in that case, it sounded like the answer was definitely no.
Yeah, and I think that's an important part about integrations. Mm-hmm. You need to know if you can trust your partner,
mm-hmm.
because you are exposing, especially if you are an ISV, you are exposing customer data to another system.
Right.
So you are responsible for taking care that the other system at least meets basic security and safety features.
Right. Okay, out of all of the projects that you've done, do you have a favorite solution? I know I'm asking you to choose your favorite of your children. I understand. And you may pick a couple if you would like.
I think my favorite is the Office 365 solution.
Okay.
Especially... Or it's Microsoft 365. Everybody says Office, but it is Microsoft.
Gotcha.
This is, I think, my favorite solution because it made it a lot longer than all other things.
Mm.
And I think the funniest one, we're doing a notes integration in 3 hours where I... did call outs to notes, changing an appointment. And I had a button on the appointment in Salesforce where you can say sync. and you get the got the appointment back.
Got
so
it.
If there was a change in notes, it was changed there. But this wouldn't be, there would be no way to scale this solution, but it was funny how fast it worked.
Got it. Nice. Okay. And then this is just kind of almost trivia at this point, but after many years, Salesforce is finally getting a patch method. Talk to me about some of the ways you've worked around the lack of that method in the past.
I'm so happy that it's there now. I think I was in the one time we built some middleware, which were just changing your call to patch.
Oh, yes.
And I think in another use case, we needed to send batch calls to the other system because patch calls were posts. And in the batch call, you could have then a patch call. So we were essentially sending single operation batch calls to the other platforms. So yeah, I'm really happy that it's here because essentially it's five letters. No, it's six. I think it's six letters. And it shouldn't be a problem to build up a whole new server.
And that's our show. Now, before we go, asking after Nina's favorite non-technical hobby. Well, it got a little complicated, but at least I managed to bring it back to the pandemic.
Not really. They were all technical. So I think the least technical were photographing on film.
Oh, yeah. No, that definitely counts. Are you still doing photography?
Sometimes, but not so much as I would like to.
Mm.
But I think that's my fault. So it's okay. And I think, yeah, I have another non-technical hobby. Food. It's definitely a hobby.
That's definitely a hobby. That's actually one of people's favorite hobbies. One recently was just baking because they're not going outside as much. So they're baking a lot. I want to thank Nina for the great conversation and information. And as always, I want to thank you for listening. Now, if you want to learn more about this podcast, head on over to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, where you can hear old stories, see the show notes, and have links to your favorite podcast service. Thanks again, and I'll talk to you next week.